You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new poll finds a majority of Americans believe President Trump should be removed from power before President-elect Biden is sworn in 8 days. The ABC News and Ipsos poll released Sunday said 56% of respondents believe Trump should be removed before Inauguration Day. A higher number, 67%, held the president responsible for the violence at the Capitol last week. What do you think? What action do you want from Congress? It's 800-642-1234. Ron Kind is a 12-term Democratic congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Representative Kind, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, Kate. Glad to be with you.
We're having a bit of trouble with your line. I'm hoping it will hold together here. You were in the House chambers Wednesday when the violent Trump supporters breached the building. Can you describe for us what you saw, what you heard?
Well, you know, it's pretty much what I've seen on TV. It was very disappointing and shocking and quite frightening, given the mob that descended on the Capitol. And I think this cannot be normal for our country as we move forward. It has to be a way for us to conference peacefully without force and conflict. And I think in the days to come, we're going to have to figure this out.
In the days to come, figure this out. Did you at any point fear for your life or for the lives of your fellow lawmakers?
Yeah, when I saw Capitol Hill securing their guns pointing at the doors because the mob was trying to, this could be a bloodbath. I mean, this could really turn into a bloodbath because those Capitol Hill security that was trying to keep the mob out of the House chamber, I'm afraid if they had penetrated that, shots would have been fired, and there would have been a lot of loss of life. So as it is, 2 police officers have died as a consequence, 4 other civilians, 1 young lady who was trying to get into the House chamber as a consequence. So, yeah, it was very real, and it was very frightening.
How do you feel law enforcement handled the situation?
It was a complete failure at the top as far as leading and planning this. There was plenty of intel, plenty of information on the internet that the mob was going to descend on Washington, that they're going to take a run on the Capitol. And for there to be a lack of planning is inexcusable. In the coming days, we will certainly conduct a comprehensive investigation. But the match that lit it, yeah, it was the President of the United States when he addressed this crowd earlier in the day, told them to march on the Capitol with great strength and force, along with Rudy Giuliani, along with Don Jr. They inflamed that crowd. They incited insurrection. And so I believe there has to be some accountability at the top as well.
Is there a way for the president to take back any of those words? What actions should President Trump take to condemn what happened at the Capitol?
Well, he should condemn it in unmistakable terms. I should tell supporters to stand down, to not come to Washington for the inauguration. And we are hearing now through the gathering of reports that there's a plan to rearm and return to Washington for the inauguration. And the president should make it clear that that is unacceptable and that there'll be consequences for that action. But it's even beyond that. You know, for too long, the president has attacked the norms of democracy for the last 4 years. And too many have shrugged their shoulders and say, well, that's just Donald being Donald. And let's just move on. And it has resulted in this, ended up with an assault on a co-equal branch, the Article 1 branch of our Constitution. And if the president had a shred of decency left, he would immediately step down, turn it over to Vice President Pence. And Vice President Pence can handle the transfer power because there is no trust at all with this president to do the right thing at the present moment.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Congressman Ron Kind from La Crosse, and you can join in. What actions would you like to see taken by Wisconsin congressional members? What do you want to convey to Congress at this point? What is unclear to you about the storming of the Capitol by Trump loyalists and the shocking display of violence? Join in at 800-642-1234. Representative, certification of the electoral vote, usually a ceremonial process for Congress, but 121 House members supported the objection, challenged the votes. How do you react to Wisconsin Congressman Scott Fitzgerald and Tom Tiffany voting against certifying election results?
Well, first of all, Kate, you're right. This should have been a day of celebration. And listen, I get the fact that it's never fun to lose an election. It's never fun to see your preferred candidate lose. But what makes America truly exceptional is the peaceful transfer of power. And that's what the world looks to for guidance and as an example of what democracy should look like. That failed us last Wednesday in our nation's capital. And for me right now at this moment, there are only two parties, the constitutionalists and you have the insurrectionists. The constitutionalists believe Constitution, the rule of law, due process, human rights and civil liberties for all our citizens. But the insurrectionists don't pledge allegiance to the Constitution. Instead, they're pledging allegiance to an individual or to a particular party or ideology. Believe in insurrection and conflict. And they operate in a world of conspiracies. They've created an alternative reality. And it's factless. It doesn't have any evidence behind it. Work any day of the week with constitutionalists, including Republicans who believe in the rule of law. But I think people today, all of us, need just what party and what country we want to live in. So a country that abides by the Constitution, the rule of law, or insurrection, and an alternative reality of conspiracy and allegations without any basis in fact and science, because it's going to be hard to establish those bonds of trust and respect if this alternate reality can be a country.
The House is expected to vote today on a resolution calling for Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment against President Trump. And if Pence does not respond within 24 hours to the resolution, the House plans to move ahead with impeachment. First of all, where do you stand on exercising the 25th Amendment?
Well, first of all, again, if the president has decency, he would just resign himself and avoid this from going any further. But barring that, and he won't, because the world has revolved around him from day one, and it's always been about him rather than what's in the best interest of our country, then the vice president should convene the cabinet and have that discussion about the time. I believe the president is a clear and present danger, given his mindset. He has gone to a very dark place right now, especially after the election, with all of these conspiracies he's been perpetrating on the American people. And somehow the election is fraudulent. It was stolen. We had 60 candidates that have dismissed his challenges, criticism, being any Trump-appointed have been criticizing these cases for lack of any fact.
And we're going to have to pause.
Bad place.
We're going to have to pause here because you are breaking up. We're going to try to get a better line here as we talk with Representative Ron Kind of Wisconsin. What do you want to convey to Congress in these moments? Should the president be removed from office? Should he be left alone over the next 8 days? Is our democracy in trouble? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Representative Kind here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have Democratic Congressman Ron Kind as we unpack the violence at the nation's capital last week and what could happen next. House Democrats, as you've heard, introduced a four-page article of impeachment yesterday, charging President Trump with, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors by inciting violence against the government of the United States. Should President Trump be removed from office before his remaining days play out? How do you want Congress to act in the wake of a traumatic week. 800-642-1234. And Representative Ron Kind stays with us for 10 more minutes. What concerns do you have about how the Capitol breach will affect our future democracy?
Well, Kate, I apologize. I'm on the move. I'm trying to get to the airport, get back to Washington today. Obviously, a very important week coming up. But
sure. You sound better.
We really do need... Well, good. We really do need a reality check, though, and just what type of country we're going to live in. One that is based on an alternative reality, lacking any facts or evidence, or if we still have the ability to reach agreement at least on what the basic facts are, so that we can work hard to find the common ground that we need in order to get things done, to work well together in a civilized society. And right now, I feel that's very much in jeopardy because of all the conspiracy theories out there and all the different media outlets, especially social media, that's propagating false information and misleading people and getting them riled up unnecessarily and leading to an insurrection in our nation's capital. And I'm not sure how you counteract that and how you can best address it, but we do need good people now, especially in elective office, that are willing to agree on the same common set of facts, or there's no way we're going to be able to resolve differences peacefully in our country.
Let's pause here on the article of impeachment introduced yesterday. It has at least 218 co-sponsors. How will you vote?
Well, I tell you, inciting an insurrection on our nation's capital on a co-equal branch, if that is not impeachable, then nothing is impeachable going forward. And again, there has to be accountability. If the president refuses to accept that on his own, we have to send a clear signal that for future leaders, if they're going to incite rebellion, that there will be serious consequences. And for the president, that means an impeachable offense. So there's still a way for him to do the right thing. I doubt he will. But for too long, Kate, we've been treating our democracy like it's a political football that we can just kick around without any consequences. It's not a football. It's more like a fragile egg.
The FBI is warning of plans for armed protests at all 50 state capitals and in D.C. That's reported by the Associated Press in an internal FBI bulletin that was disclosed. Governor Evers has called up the National Guard. What concerns you about the days ahead as you look especially at Wisconsin's Capitol? I think we just lost Congressman Ron Kind as we work through phone issues this morning. The House is expected to vote today on a resolution calling for Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment against President Trump. And if Pence does not respond within 24 hours to the 25th Amendment resolution, the House plans to move ahead with impeachment proceedings. Where do you stand on exercising the 25th or on the articles of impeachment? What do you want to tell Congress? And what do you think should happen next? Are you concerned about the prospect of more violence? And what would that mean? 800-642-1234. We've been talking with Congressman Ron Kind, who was in House chambers during Wednesday's attack on the Capitol. And he has been explaining what he sees as next steps. He represents Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, including La Crosse, Stevens Point, Platteville, and Eau Claire. We're trying to reconnect with him as he's been on the move this morning. Representative, are you there?
I am, Kate. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Let's move on to the FBI warning about future protests, armed protests at the Capitol's National Guard called up in Wisconsin. Your thoughts?
Well, I think we have to heed these warnings seriously and take all necessary precautions. I mean, this is something that preceded even January 6th. We saw the attempted kidnapping and execution of the Michigan governor last year, and the threats seem to be mounting right now. And that's why I think it's so important for the president now to tell his supporters to stand down, that this is not how our democracy is supposed to work. And I fear that only he can deliver that message right now. And I hope in the coming days that he does.
What can you tell us about a provision in the Constitution's impeachment clauses that could allow Congress to bar President Trump from ever holding federal office again? How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I'm not an expert on that, but apparently if a sitting president is impeached and convicted, there has to be conviction in the Senate as well, that too would bar him from running for a future federal office. And again, that seems to be down the road a little bit, but I think more importantly, it's the precedent that we're trying to establish, that if you're inciting an insurrection against the government of the United States as sitting president, that's an impeachable offense, and no one should have any doubt about that. So I'm fearing that by failing to take any action, by heeding some calls of let's just let bygones be bygones, move on, this is about unity now, that it will establish a new norm of potential insurrection in our country, and we just can't have that. It has to be clear that this is unacceptable.
Twitter has said it has suspended more than 70,000 accounts since Friday that were primarily dedicated to sharing QAnon content, cracking down on content after the storming of the Capitol. What would you say about the role of social media here?
Well, they do have a responsibility that they're not offering a platform to incite violence in our country. And no one has a constitutional First Amendment right to incite violence. But, you know, Twitter and these social media companies, they're not government. They're private entities, so they can do anything that they want when it comes to speech in our country. The First Amendment only applies to government prohibiting speech and not to these private companies. So people are out there screaming First Amendment, First Amendment. Well, again, we need to become constitutionalists and understand what the Constitution actually provides.
What do Democrats hope to get out of the next days ahead here and the articles of impeachment, because President Trump will leave office in 8 days?
Well, we're hoping to develop some consensus with our Republican colleagues, too many of whom were perpetuating the big lie that the election was stolen, that it was fraudulent, that it should be resisted. And actually too many of them voted to overturn the valid election results of a national campaign in our nation. And in the coming days, I'm hoping that more of my Republican colleagues realize the type of environment that they've been complicit in helping to create, and will work with us to restore the norms of our democracy and respect for the Constitution and the rule of law, and not some allegiance to one individual and placing him above the Constitution, placing him above the rule of law and due process in our country.
Last week, President Trump announced he doesn't plan to attend the inauguration. What example do you think this sets for our country?
Well, again, one of the things that does make America exceptional is the peaceful transfer of power, and the rest of the world is watching us very closely right now. This just reinforces that viewpoint, that the current president has no respect for the norms of our democracy, and it just plays right into our enemy's hands for propaganda purposes, that we're no better than they are. And they've taken advantage of the situation, as we've seen in the last week. And it diminishes our image and therefore our influence and our moral authority throughout the globe. And it's another great unfortunate consequence flowing from all this.
Representative, heading now days into Inauguration Day, have you received security briefings about what to expect in the next days and through the inauguration?
Yes, we have, Kate, and it's very chilling and very concerning. And I think all of us need to be in heightened awareness around us right now. And unfortunately, that's the world that's been created that we have to live in at the present moment.
After the inauguration, Biden and Harris, what would you like to see from their administration as to how to handle this raging COVID crisis? What needs to happen first?
You know, Kay, it's a good way to end this conversation, because I am hopeful still for the future of our country. And one reason is because of Joe Biden. He is going to be committed to be the president for all Americans, even those who didn't support him. He is going to respect the institutions of our democracy, the norms of our democracy. He's going to work hard to find common ground. He's going to attack this coronavirus and try to keep people safe. and try to rebuild our economy better and expand opportunities for all Americans. And we need that sense of decency and normalcy in the Oval Office again.
Before we let you go, do you have fears, trepidation of returning back inside the Capitol building?
No, I don't. I think security has certainly been elevated since January 6th. But the great irony in all this, Kate, is that the president's going to finally get his wish of building a big, beautiful wall. Unfortunately, that wall now is going to circle the United States Capitol. And again, it's so disheartening to see that people are going to be removed layer from layer from layer from their elected representatives because of the threat that exists out there.
Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate. Stay safe.
You too. Ron Kind, 12-term Democratic congressman representing the 3rd Congressional District in southwestern Wisconsin. Just a note, WPR has reached out to every member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation with an invitation to join us on the air and share with you what they experienced last week. Coming up, we talk with the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join us tonight at 7 for Governor Evers' annual State of the State address. We'll bring you live coverage on WPR. The address will be delivered virtually due to COVID and will be followed by the Republican response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. That's live coverage of the State of the State address tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Right now, we're dropping in on the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. This is a nationwide initiative helping more than 100,000 people in the U.S. resolve financial challenges. The only affiliate site in Wisconsin. Did a community resource help you get back on your feet financially? How so? Join in by email at ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Zennia Jackson is a financial counselor at the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. Zennia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. We also have Vicki Selko with us, Manager of Strategic Initiatives and Community Partnerships for the City of Racine. Vicki, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, Vicki, let's start with you. Take us on a tour, if you will, of the Financial Empowerment Center. What is it?
Sure. So the Racine Financial Empowerment Center, or the FEC, as we call it, really offers City of Racine residents free professional one-on-one help to get a handle on their debt, their savings, their credit, their banking, their budgeting, and to really help them come up with a plan to put them in a better financial position both now and well into the future. I mean, I think, you know, we just heard your news highlights as well, and certainly residents across the country, just like residents in the city of Racine, are struggling financially right now due to the pandemic, due to maybe taking on more on the credit cards than they wanted to put on this year. They may be behind on student loan payments. Maybe their hours were cut this year. Or maybe they haven't really been impacted by the pandemic, but they still have financial goals they're struggling to reach. And what the FEC offers them is help and hope to help address and untangle those financial issues.
Zennia, why is one-on-one counseling so important?
We have noticed that in the city of Racine, things like classes were offered on a broader scale. But once we took a look and saw how much help these clients needed, I would say that the service plan is the big thing. We tailor it to each client. So we're addressing their particular needs. It's not like a blanket type of initiative.
Oh, those broader classes may give out some general tips and advice, but you're really able to tailor your advice to a particular client situation, financial situation.
Exactly. We call it unpacking the baggage. We will go ahead and help you unzip that, unpack it, and then fold it nicely and put it back in there so we can make sure you hit those goals.
What have you been seeing? The center is pretty newly opened. What are some of the financial difficulties you're encountering as a financial counselor?
So the biggest ones we have seen so far are definitely student loans. That is something that our city is definitely struggling. Our constituents are struggling in that area. Also, just really making ends meet every month. My partner, Curtis, and I have noticed that at the end of the month, a lot of our residents here don't really know where all of their dollars are going.
Okay, and so it's really trying to understand where the paycheck is going, where the money is going. How has COVID hit your clients? What are they affected by this economy, this recession?
Most definitely. The majority of our clients have been affected by COVID. The good thing is, though, that they have, the majority of my clients for sure have been able to reach out to apply for a SNAP or you know, medical needs and things like that.
So social net programs have been helpful. Vicki, how is the Financial Empowerment Center funded?
So it's funded through a combination of sources. Our national partner, the Cities for Financial Empowerment Fund, is also a funder of ours. We've also used some federal funding, and we've raised support from local financial institutions and from other partners. We've been lucky enough to have from our national partner a challenge grant given to us where if we raised $150,000 for our first year to get off the ground, they would give us a direct match. So we've achieved that goal, and we're now in the process of trying to reach our second match goal where we need to raise $200,000 to begin to sustain the FEC. And if we do that, our national partner will provide another $100,000 to the city of Racine to run the FEC. And so for a city Racine size, being able to be the first in Wisconsin to offer this sort of free professional service to our residents is something we're really proud of and want to sustain and grow it. We know very well that as the word gets out about this, we will likely need more than the two counselors we've hired so far. We would like to grow and be able to have three or more counselors to serve residents. And so reaching those financial goals and being able to pay for it ourselves is something we're going to be working hard on.
Vicki, why was this a priority for Racine? What was the motivation for making this something that your city needed to do?
So for Mayor Mason and the administration, this really started with our efforts to unpack and really examine some of the disparities that are facing our residents, particularly our racial and ethnic disparities in terms of home ownership and income and savings and overall financial resiliency. We were certainly hearing from our community partners and from residents about how many residents were trying to get in a good place to be able to get a car loan at good terms, to be able to become a homeowner, to have the money they needed so when the tire blows out on the car, they've got a little bit of a cushion to go get that tire replaced and still get to work. And we were hearing again and again that for so many of our residents, all of those financial issues were real hurdles to their success as workers, their success as parents, their success at just achieving their own financial goals for the future in terms of home ownership or starting a business. And so that's where it started for us. I mean, for example, the city of Racine is 47% renters. We want more of those renters in the city to have the financial knowledge and the tools that they need to stop paying rent and instead be able to become homeowners in the city and be able to build generational wealth as well. That's what started us on this journey more than a year ago to get connected to our national partner and to become part of this effort and launch this free professional service for our residents in December.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Vicki Selko and Xenia Jackson. They're representatives of the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. We're exploring how this nationwide initiative is up and running now in Racine. Do you live in Racine? Where do you look for financial advice? Have you heard of the center? How do you handle your credit? Have you been able to improve your credit score or build your credit? What has this pandemic done to your financial situation? Join in at 800-642-1234. Actually, email ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Xenia, walk us through setting up an appointment with a financial counselor. What does an initial appointment look like?
Sure. So to set up an appointment, there are two different ways. You can either give us a call at 262-200-0831. You can also visit our website, which is www.racinefec.org. There is a little link there where you can request an appointment. Now, a first appointment, the first thing we do is we set expectations. Typically, we ask the client for about 2 hours of their time. We make sure that they understand that this is a long-term relationship. Counseling, especially financial counseling, is going to be something that is long-term due to credit work and getting acclimated to a budget does take time. We also go through two different assessments to address immediate need, which is a COVID assessment. The second assessment we do is a financial health assessment, which gives us an overall picture, just an overall financial picture of where the person may be at the time. After that, we go ahead and pull credit. We do go, typically if a person allows me to do video with them, I share my screen so that we are looking at the same credit report at the same time. And we go through each area, including utilization. And then the last thing we do right before I give them their homework is we go ahead and do something called the money tracker. So they go through their expenses with me pretty much line by line, what they spend in groceries, what they spend in entertainment, car payment, things like that. After that, typically I give them their homework. So once we know what their goals are and the things that they need to work on, they do get assigned homework after each session.
So this, you start learning about who they are as a person. You learn about their family, perhaps, and their much larger community and where they spend their money. Are these for individuals? Do you also see couples?
Yes, ma'am. We do. Couples as well. The only requirement is to be a City of Racine resident and to be 18 years old.
Do you find that you might have couples who see their finances differently or want to approach how they get out of a financial hardship and, you know, they have differing views on it?
Absolutely. We are financial counselors, but a lot of times we do a lot more in that office. We do have couples that, aren't seeing eye to eye or, may have different ideas, like you mentioned, about how to get out of that financial situation they're in. So we're not only financial counselors, sometimes we're a little bit more.
How do you reckon with those situations? What do you do when you clearly see disagreement?
I'm sorry, you went out. Could you repeat the question?
Well, actually, let's just pause here as we talk with Zennia Jackson and Vicky Selko, who work on the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. What has the pandemic done to you financially? Where do you look to get financial guidance in difficult times? How is your credit? And are you able to repair it or improve your credit worthiness? Join in. You can email ideas at WPR.org, tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about the work of the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. It's part of a nationwide initiative providing people with one-on-one support to navigate financial struggles. Racine is the only affiliate site in Wisconsin. We have Vicky Selko, the manager of strategic initiatives and community partnerships for the City of Racine, and Zennia Jackson, a financial counselor at the center. They're with us for 10 more minutes. Zennia, as a counselor, what do you do when your couples don't see eye to eye on spending, on saving, on debt, on risk? How do you counsel them?
I actually like to meet with them individually. I know that in our system, we have to create individual profiles and then we link them together so that we know that the two parties are of the same household. But if we're having disagreements, typically I go ahead and separate them and counsel them individually to try and find a common ground.
Vicky, what has it been like for you to reach out to other affiliate sites around the country and find out what impact they're making on the cities they serve? What have you learned?
I mean, it's been really inspiring to see what they've been able to accomplish. And I think that has been incredibly motivating for us here in the city of Racine to get this new service off the ground. It is clear that, I mean, they are, all of the FECs across the country are seeing people who have quite low incomes when they come through the door. On average, their incomes are less than around $21,000 a year. Or certainly less than $26,000 is about what they're seeing. And even with relatively low incomes and high debts when they come in and low savings, the FEC counseling works and is able to help residents reduce their debt significantly, improve their credit scores, put aside a week or a month's worth of savings. And that is really motivating for us because we know that those sorts of changes in the city of Racine could really be transformational. Each of our counselors, I mean, we have two new counselors, these full-time counselors hired, they're expected in their first year to see 200 unique clients each as a minimum. And so for the city that has, you know, we have less than 80,000 people total here, for us to start thinking about the transformation that could occur if we had 400 residents or more a year who have those sorts of measurable outcomes, where they're in a better position to get a car loan at good rates, where they're better positioned to become homeowners, where they have the savings to ride out rainy days, where they've got the skills and the knowledge to budget better and end up in a better position at the end of each month. That is really exciting for us, and we are really looking forward to starting to see those outcomes here with our residents.
Zennia, how important is it for clients, though, to make a living wage? Because when you're looking at people who are on the margins of poverty, you know, even pinching every penny may not be enough.
So the way that we like to look at it is we can work with wherever you are. So you may not be making a living wage right at the moment when you begin, but that is also part of the financial counseling portion. You know, we have discovered that a lot of it is about budgeting. It's not necessarily how much you're bringing in, but how it's being allocated.
If I could just add too, Kate, we've also built a really strong network of community partners. We have almost 20 community partners right now who we've very intentionally cultivated to be part of our referral network for our clients, so that if Zennia and Curtis are seeing clients come in where the issue really is, you know, they're working and there's just not enough coming in and they are eager for better work or different work, or want to consider education or training to help them get on a path to a living wage, we have those partnerships in place and those referral networks in place. So we can really seamlessly say to them, did you know about this opportunity? Did you know about this partner? Let's connect you so that you have an opportunity to not just handle what money you have right now, but also be better positioned to connect with resources to have more money coming in the future.
Yeah, so really making that network available and being able to refer out based on what that person is facing.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Vicki Selko and Zennia Jackson. They're representatives of the Racine Financial Empowerment Center that's now open. They're explaining how the center works to help people overcome financial struggles and taking your questions about the center and how it got up and running in Racine. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Zennia, let's talk about pandemic aid. What types of calls or questions are you receiving about stimulus aid, stimulus checks?
I actually haven't received any myself yet.
That's interesting because this is thousands of dollars.
Yes, I have not received any yet. The clients that I have counseled so far have all received their stimulus check.
They've all received it and you haven't said, hey, you know, you should try putting it here first or here first. Are there particular challenges you're seeing, you know, in job loss as you counsel your clients?
Yes, we have seen job loss or reduction in hours. However, we have seen a lot of resiliency as well. Our clients seem to be eager to get back into the workforce and eager to, like Vicki said, receive those referrals and network to get back on track.
You know, Vicki, with so many people in Racine who are in rental housing, are you concerned about evictions amid the pandemic?
Of course. And the city has put a lot of our federal resources that we've received through the CARES Act into place to be able to support residents and to prevent those evictions. And again, that is really integrated into the FEC so that our counselors can refer people who say, yeah, I'm behind on rent and I'm worried about it. Our counselors know where to direct them in the city so they can get connected to resources to hopefully prevent that and try and get back on track with their rent payments. I mean, I think the overall message with the FEC that relates to folks struggling with COVID or people who have more, more stable income that wasn't necessarily impacted by COVID is that everyone struggles with money at some point. And these are not issues to be ashamed about. They're also not things that improve magically on their own without any attention. And what the Racine FEC is offering our residents is professionals free of charge to help them unpack that and to really help them address those issues judgment-free, because the money issues aren't going to go away if you ignore them. But if you can get professional help that can just meet you where you're at and help you build a plan to have a better financial future, you and your family are going to be in so much better shape down the road.
Vicki, are you able to reach non-English speaking residents of Racine?
We absolutely are. We knew we had two counselors we could hire right out of the gate, and we made sure that one of them was fully bilingual in Spanish, and that is Xenia. So we are thrilled that she's part of this. She can serve our Spanish-speaking community. And as I said, we are actively planning and fundraising so that if that need for additional Spanish-speaking counselors, for example, or just to add a third counselor, if that happens, we hope to be ready to do that within the next year, year and a half.
Xenia, when we talk about money, it's also a trust issue. How do you build trust among your clients?
I definitely try to. I had a client, for instance, who was very upset because her credit score was much lower than she had anticipated. And I just try to let them know that credit is really just an algorithm that predicts, you know, how likely you are to make your next month's payment. It doesn't reflect on who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. So I just make them feel comfortable. I want to, you know, we remove the judgment, remove all of we try to remove the apprehension and the scary portions. I mean, this is, finances are intimidating. So we just try to address them holistically and hope that, we turn it around.
Vicki, what are Racine's long-term goals for the Financial Empowerment Center?
We would love to be able to grow the center to add more capacity to it, and certainly to be able to have sustainable funding so the city service, our plan is to have this be in place permanently to serve our residents. We want to see residents coming out of the FEC in big numbers with improved credit scores that allow them to, whether it's renting an apartment that requires a good credit score or getting a car loan or becoming a homeowner, we are really looking forward to those results from this one-on-one counseling. And know, based on the examples from other cities that have done this and other communities, that is absolutely possible for our residents. And we see this as a really key piece to having a more sustainable city and a thriving city where our residents can thrive as well as the city overall.
Vicki and Xenia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Vicki Selko, Manager of Strategic Initiatives and Community Partnerships for the City of Racine. Xenia Jackson, a financial counselor at the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.